Hello everyone and welcome to the most gangster podcast in the world, Crib of Games. Today I'm joined by my brother from another mother, at least we think he is. Oh no! And two other brothers from maybe different mothers, Daniel and Simon. But before I pass you the spliff, let's break into today's episode of House of Games. Welcome to this week's episode of House of Games. As usual, we have special guests, or I would say not as usual, we have guests in the plural this week. So I think without further ado, I think I will let my guests introduce themselves and we'll take the conversations from there. So guests, take it away. Tell us who you are and what you do.
And then there's the dead silence waiting for people to figure out which one of the brothers wins this time. Obviously, since I'm the oldest one, I go first. We are Daniel and Simon. I'm Daniel from Bromantic Games, developing a settlement builder at the moment, which is way different from the game we used to develop.
Don't tell them about it. Don't.
The last 12 years. No, okay. We don't talk about that. We're three brothers making games we love to play, and currently it's the settlement builder genre that takes up all our time. That and family, but that's besides the point for this round. Simon, maybe you wanna sprinkle some tidbits of information.
I don't have a lot of information. I have too much information. But anyway, my name is Simon. I'm what's called a lead designer. Maybe that's a fitting name. Working on the 3D models and the animations for our current game, Falklands. So I'm the younger of us two, but our third brother, who is also helping us develop the game, is the youngest one still. And that's not going to change for a while.
Do you mean he's not getting old? Do you mean he's not getting older? Or do you have some inside information from our mother?
He still has a lot of years to catch up. So.
But I thought you meant that he will die and then one of you will become the younger brother because he's no longer alive. But when Oda said you guys look alike, I didn't know you guys were actually brothers. I just thought it was like some sort of incest thing going on. Like people looking alike and they make games together. And that's awesome.
I mean, there's an ongoing thing about people from the Nordic countries looking very much the same.
Yeah.
We take that to the extreme, but then we are actually brothers.
Three brothers so. Making games together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So both of us, me and Rune, have tried the public demo for your game, Falklands. So first of all, before we go into details about that game, so could you tell us just again a little bit more about what it is and like the process of making it from like idea stage to where we are now, and maybe something short about your plans for releasing it.
Yeah, we can maybe Daniel can start with how we started the whole gaming thing, since he was so eager to tell that story.
there's a longer story here. I mean, we've always played games since we were little. I mean, we love playing games, and we haven't really had one genre that we preferred, so we've played everything from strategy games to story games and shooters and everything from, you name it, we probably touched it. But we've always wanted to make something that was our own. So back in, let's say 12-ish years ago, Simon had a dream about making his own fantasy universe. So he started off making an animated movie script series. I think he made a whole thing about it. It never really materialized into anything big, but we took that idea and then we made a lot of renders. Yeah, I think that movie is probably still rendering. If you
probably.
So we took the ideas and the lore around his movie, and we turned that into a card game, like a strategic-ish card game with it was an ongoing idea that we never actually managed to fully finish it, but there is a released game and we kind of enjoyed playing it until one day when we were kind of, we were all a bit down, like the game didn't take off, and obviously we're indie developers, we taking off is a rare incident, but we kind of had this day where we all sat down and like, yeah, I really never liked card games, I said. And then Simon said, what? I hate card games. So that was 12 years. So if that doesn't illustrate the lack of communications between brothers in a good way, I don't know what does.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about that. I just want to say really quick, I worked as an au pair in America for a year when I was 19, and I wrote a script for a movie to like practice English basically and writing. And that movie idea is something that I want to turn into a game one day. So I like that you wrote your own little universe. Did you say anime or did I mishear you?
No, it was like an animated movie. It was like probably more like an anime or closer, but Shrek. It was like Shrek 3D. And I had a friend in Canada who was doing some modeling, and someone down in Australia who wrote a 60-page script for the movie with our lore and everything. So we just expanded on that and going into the game.
I just thought that was quite interesting that we had almost like a very similar start. Like I also started writing basically a movie, and then even though I don't really care for movies that much, to be honest, but then I used to this could be a cool game, and I wanted to turn it into a game. But that was not my question. Is three brothers making games together, like how the hell does that work? Like how do you communicate? Well, clearly you didn't for 12 years, but next time around, how do you communicate?
The thing is, we had like not daily check-ins and discussions, but we several times a week we'd come together and kind of just, I mean, we're hanging out, chatting, we're snapping every day, we're talking, and we've always had a good communication between us, and we kind of like the same games. We have a tendency to end up playing games together and just trying out new things. So I don't know, I think we just happen to be in sync with the kind of the way we work when we make games, but we should probably have checked if we wanted to make that game sometime during those 12 years. But we did take the segue into Falklands was that we stopped developing that game and still wanted to make a game, and then we had a talk about what kind of game do we all like to play, and we all like this city builder strategy game, kind of like Age of Empires, Anno, Banished, this kind of game. And at the same time, we also like the Civilization series, and Simon has a friend that is super into Crusader Kings and anything that has simulates family relationships
and also strategy game. Living in a different side of the country as well, and trying to keep that bond together as brothers. So it's like the multiplayer part was crucial for us to like have a game that we can play together.
I would like to ask one more brother question before we enter the Falklands, because my brother and I, we also tried to make games together, but it just nothing happened. It felt like I talked to this to other guests, like both my brother and I became like the directors, and that nothing happened when both of us want our will. Like we both want to do, we had a similar idea, but it was like we were both in charge and no one did the actual fucking game, so like nothing happened. And we also do that thing when we play games together. He might come and visit us in Japan, and I was like, if you're gonna play Starfield, wait with it, and then we can sit next to each other and play, even though it's an offline game, but you know, my screen here, his screen here, and we sit next to each other and play and be quiet. That's usually how it goes, but there's some, you know, that brotherness in that. But my question is, how can you how do you give each other tasks, and like, are you all in charge, or like how do you separate
I guess it goes back to when we were younger. We have a I don't I don't I don't know the name for the English part of it. Do you remember? Hinge brick.
Hinge brick.
As you're talking about Lego from previously. you have the hinge brick. When I was maybe 5 or 6 years old, I discovered the hinge brick in Lego, and they had a nickname for me, and that was hinge brick, but in Norwegian, of course. And that was whenever I see a hinge brick, it's like, think of all the possibilities. Like think of what we can do. We can make a sliding door. We can make a secret castle with us. Yeah, everything revolves around the hinge brick, and so. That is like how we work. Is like I'm giving hinge bricks to Daniel, and he's giving hinge bricks to me. It's like, what if? No. Mm. No, but what if? So it's like a what if, just like back and forth. What if? And then we just settle on an idea or something new to work on. But we have the first thing we just decided on was like, what is our goal with this game? And then yeah, it all revolves around it. And mainly, we are pretty much in sync of what we want to achieve, and then anything we can manage within our time frame and skill set, we want to include that into the game as well.
So, but what about the third brother, who is at the time of recording still the youngest? What's his part of it?
Yes, his name is Sebastian, and he's like the one keeping us in check, I guess. Like whenever we go out of our way to like include something big and magical or something that we really want to include in the game, and he's like, this doesn't make sense at all. And then he's like, because he is the one who he doesn't play that much strategy games. And he has a different approach, more like, nice. Yeah, he has a different approach on the game. So it's more like, yeah, you need to clarify this part of the game. And then, yeah, he keeps us in check, at least. So if there's something we don't agree on, then we just run it past him. And then usually it works out.
He's very skilled at making the game kind of make sense in as a whole. Like in the previous game, he did the maps, the main world map, and kind of how does this part of the world connect to this part of the world? How does that connect into the full game lore? And then he's a super skilled QA playtester.
That's a nice way of saying he's breaking the game.
He breaks our games in ways we didn't imagine. And then, like Simon said, we all have this overall goal of a game that we can pick up and play when we want to have like 1 or 3 hours, 4 hours where we play together. And
cool. Who does the programming and who does the art? And
so Daniel is the developer. That's the easy way to say it. I tried a couple of times, but I'm just falling off every time. And then we hire some people through Upwork for the artwork to get like a general idea, and then I do the modeling or concept art. And then we also for the modeling part, I do everything that is hard surface modeling. And then because of the press of time to actually deliver the game, we needed some help with organic modeling. So for the people, but anything that's the split mostly, and then some concept sketches also from Sebastian in the early stages where we started. So
give us a more like in-depth like description of the actual game. So tell us about like the origins of that and what you do in it and like what is the future for it.
So the game is like a classic settlement builder. If you our idea is that it's supposed to combine the things we liked from Settlers Anno, a banished game that doesn't want to kill you every second season, and the Caesar Pharaoh game. So it's like a mixture of all of this where we try to capture the feeling that we got when we played those games. It's a retro stylish isometric city builder game, slow paced ish. We want to find a good game speed, but it's kind of a relaxing atmosphere. Focused around this whole cut down a tree, get a log, get a plank, make that plank into a house, make a better house.
And we know we're not reinventing the genre in any way. It's like we're building upon the great games that have been made before, but trying to, as Daniel said, trying to get that feeling of nostalgia and like calm, and as well as the multiplayer, like across the Linux, Mac, and Windows, because we're all in different platforms, the brothers. Mm-hmm. So that's like, whenever you want, you just want to pick it up and just continue, and then just have a nice time. So yeah.
So that's the idea, because we also play Transport Tycoon a lot, and the cool thing about that is you can play, start playing the game, and it's like, oh, do you want to join? Yeah, sure, I want to join. Then they kind of join into your world, and then they will start off in a corner of the map, and they'll do their thing, and you kind of connect through something. So we want to have that feeling as well, where you can actually bring your friend into the world that you're already playing, or you could just sit down and say, "I want to let's play a couple of hours and just have
fun."
Yeah,
my question was, what makes your game different from other games in the genre, and why attempt this type of game? Because it's quite a task, and also, but you sort of answer both of them, that you're not trying to reinvent the wheel, but you want to have this nostalgia for this type of game. And I could totally feel that when I started playing the demo, like. It was really bringing me back to Age of Empires, to be honest, obviously. But I wonder. So I love strategy games, but I haven't played them in ages, and I wonder how complicated the recent one must feel. I don't know if I can imagine that maybe the latest Age of Empires is very complicated compared to the first one that I played as a kid. So a game like yours would probably feel more welcoming to me. At least I felt it was very nostalgic to play it. But I also wanted to ask why attempt this type of game. Yeah, you answered that too. It was like something you loved, and that's great.
Yeah, there are. I mean, it's the answer is kind of multi-layered, because even if you pick up, like, if you take the Settlers games that you played before and you try picking that up now, you'll feel that it hasn't. I mean, it's a game of its time. It was great at the time, but there are things in the game now that you wouldn't do the same way. So, and of course, like online services, unless you do this Settlers universe thing patch, you won't get the online service the way that it worked back then. And then it's like, yeah, it'll work, but it's not going to be great. And then you have like Banished, which is an awesome game. My two pet peeves about that game is, one, it really really doesn't want you to survive, which it's in the game. It's part of the like the whole scenario thing. But when I'm playing it, either I'm playing it very wrong, or it just doesn't want me to survive. So my people tend to die in the second season. If they survive the second season, they'll die off in the fourth season.
I don't know what I'm doing wrong.
But,
okay, but sure.
And it's not multiplayer. So we keep finding these good games, and they have tons of good ideas, and they're very rarely ever multiplayer. So it's really hard to find a good game that you can... unless it has a very specific setting, like I think Northgard is multiplayer, or maybe Valheim, but it's like this very specific setting, and then you kind of
and the multiplayer part is usually just like fighting off. That's like that's usually, but we're trying more of the, we're looking for more of the what's it called, cooperation part, or like living in peacefully, but like with some like what's it called, pushing, I guess that's the word, tension part.
We want some tension elements, but at the same time it's a peaceful, relaxing game at the core, but you can have this, you can choose to either fight-ish to get to the resources first, or you can cooperate and build out each other's settlements by working together and focusing on different resources and areas. And then you have the workshop.
I was going to say, you touched on something that I felt when I played the demo. Like, if I were to go back and play Age of Empires today, like, the memory of what I have of that game is like, oh, it's this beautiful thing. And I bet when I boot it up, it's going to look like absolute garbage. But I feel like when I played your game, it was almost like I felt like I was back in the... when I was a kid and played games, and like, it's a beautiful game, but Does that make sense? So if I were to play an old game, it will actually look shit, but this looks like a really beautiful game, sort of how I remember games looking like back then. So that, I thought that was quite interesting.
That's the best compliment ever. It's that exact feeling that we want to recreate. And I totally understand what you feel, because I have the same experience whenever I load up old games or old movies even. It's like, this is not as good as I remembered it. I'll just keep that good memory in my head instead.
but also, there was something that somebody commented very, very early on in our development. Like, we just posted a screenshot and then talked about, like, the Caesar or Pharaoh games. They had, like, this services, like the fire service or medical service. And it was always like, just place it and then make sure you placed it. That's the important thing. We want to expand on the part where it's like, there is a reason for you placing this fire station. There are people here working, and they have a limit to their reach, and like, they're actually working, so you have to balance that part. And then later on, when we introduce new services like health and crime, there's a reason behind it.
So we want to make sure it's not just because we got a similar, like, the same thing that Simon said. You got a comment where we said we were inspired by the Fire and Caesar games, and then they would say, okay, in the Fire and Caesar games, you placed a fire station, and then you did that, and then you placed a building inspector, and then you had to have that. But it was just about making sure they fit into the grid. They didn't really have a reason to be there, and they didn't bring fun into the game experience. It was just like an annoying thing that you had to have, but it didn't really bring any extra into the game. So like Simon said, we want it to be part of this whole resource management thing. Like we have, like Simon said, there are people working there. We have this whole health energy system where people have to go back and sleep. And
I can definitely like recognize elements from Caesar 3. I play that a lot, so I can really like appreciate that you have this sort of system where like citizens have needs, and you have like base needs like food and sleep, and then you have like more sophisticated needs like in Caesar 3, for example, it's pottery or olive oil or more wine or more like not essential stuff, but you know, those sort of things. And I
and we're only touching upon that in the demo as well. So we have this whole progression system planned out for like the first six levels or something, like tiers, and we're only touching upon that in the demo. So we kind of just give you the feeling and the idea that what we want to make. And saying, I recognize Caesar, or I recognize Settlers, I recognize Age of Empires, I recognize Anno. It's like it's the best compliment we can get. That means we managed to do what we set out to do, and then it can only get better from there.
So the multiplayer, I'm a little bit curious about that because I haven't tried that out myself. So is that, would you describe it like Factorio or more like Archon mode in StarCraft? If you play that. So Archon mode, for those who don't know, imagine that there's this creature in StarCraft where you have like two wizards, and if you merge them into one unit, you become an Archon, which is a more powerful unit. And in Archon mode, it's basically where you have multiplayer, but you're two different people on two different computers who can control the same units and have the same resources and money and all of that stuff. And in Factorio, it's more like you have access to the same stuff, but you're two separate sort of players. So how does it work in your game?
it's not the StarCraft one. It's the one where you're your own economy. You have your own people, you have your own buildings and everything, but it's on a shared map, and it's in the same world, and resources are finite, so you have to figure out where you want to put down set up camp, and you have to figure out where you want to expand. And because the map isn't huge, you're not fighting for the resources, but obviously because things are limited, there's going to be a tension there around who gets these resources and where are the resources. Like in the beginning, now you have wood and stone, But as the game progresses, you have to make your own tools, and then you have to find iron, coal, gold, these other things. And they're only located in certain...
Yeah, as well as luxuries as well, so, yeah.
Luxuries as well, yeah. And they're only located in certain parts of the map, so you have to expand in that direction. And that's the tension bit and the cooperation bit, because you could end up with a map, because it's randomly generated. All the maps are randomly generated. So you could end up with a map where, say, one of the crucial resources is only available in one part of the map, and it only makes sense for one of the players to get there. So then he or she could kind of control the economy if they wanted to, and then it becomes crucial to cooperate. When we played Age of Empires together when we were children, I used to wall in my my opponent. He's shaking his head. Because in Age of Empires, you start off in different areas of the map, right? But there are no limits to where you can build. So I used to send out my people as early as I could and figure out where the other players were. And then I'll just wall them in their corner. And I had the rest of the... because we had this, like... understood peace mode. We wouldn't attack each other until we were all ready. So, and then like, oh yeah, there's the wall.
I usually got kicked because I didn't understand the peace part. So,
when I was a kid, we played Red Alert on PlayStation with a link cable, which is hardcore. And then we had the TVs facing away from each other. And then my brother and I was just trash talking all the time. Your mom is a bitch. Your mom. Your mom is... And then when my brother became totally silent, I knew he was going to nuke me. So it was just like trash talk until he was like super concentrated to nuke me in the right position. Then he became silent. And then I would... Because you know when you play on PlayStation controllers, everything is just so badly controlled. So I would go down to the fixing tool icon and just... be prepared for the nuke to drop on my main base and then click on fix before his airplane came to blow up. But yeah, that was good fun. Nice, good old memories. I just thought about that when you brought up the wall.
Did you play Empire Earth by any chance? It's a similar game to Age of Empires. It's very, very similar in build-up and everything, but it's 3D instead of isometric 2D. But that had nukes, and that was one of the funnest part of that game. Is like, it would be very unfortunate if that settlement there over there got nuked, wouldn't it? That's like the most subtle threat you could make.
Yeah, I Google now and I recognize it. But so the first Empire Earth, was that asymmetric, or were they all in 3D?
It's isometric 3D-ish. So it's still the isometric look, but it's 3D. So
I see what you mean. Yes, yeah, I recognize it at least. Ah, cool.
But there are no nukes in Falklands. It's a very peaceful game.
Yeah, I can imagine. But what is the idea for the full game? So, like, on completion, is it gonna be like something like Factorio, where you start and then you can just build forever and there's no like finite end to the game? Or is it going to be more like Caesar 3, for example, where you have distinct levels where the goal of this level is to reach this amount of population or something like that?
That's a thing we haven't really finalized on yet. We want one of the things we like...
Don't wait 12 years for
no, we won't wait. well, at least let's give it 1 year and then we'll ask each other, do you actually like playing these kind of games?
Yeah. No, we talked about this many times, because there's also somebody who really wants to continue playing, like, I really like this village, I really want to continue playing this and expand upon it. And then we also have tiered buildings, so some, like, you have, like, later you will have like normal folks and then like nobles, and you have to find that balance, because nobles doesn't want to live too close to normal folks. Like, that's the idea.
mimicking society in very subtle ways.
Mimicking society. Mm-hmm. But there is always somebody who wants to finish. So we want to implement like a scoreboard of some sort. And for example, in Age of Empires, we have like win by victory points, or win by wonders, or win by first one doing this thing. And we will include these victory scenarios for people who wants to have those, so both in single player and in multiplayer parts. So if you want to, you can have like an end game, and you also have that the end of game has been reached. Do you want to continue play? Like that, do you have those kind of games as well? So we will probably find we will try to find a balance, and the whole part of this game development is also listening to the feedback of the players. So as we progress, if people really have a strong opinion on some part, then we want them to be able to change the course of the game to some degree.
Yeah, and that last part there is super important as well, because we have our ideas of how this game will work, and we have our own reasons for making it. But one of the cool things when we launched the demo the first time was seeing what parts of this type of game do other players like. I mean, what are their favorite mechanics from other games? What are their favorite progression systems? How do they like the world to interact? So listening to the feedback that we got from the first few months of player testing and implementing that has been it's made the game so much better, and we want to make sure we don't lose that bit either. So we can have our opinion now about how we want to implement win conditions or scenarios, and then we'll see in the end how it ends up.
I'm curious for my own sake, because I'm gonna make some early access for my game, and it's a quite ambitious game to make myself, and I really need feedback and people to play it to see how it's balanced and so on. So I'm just curious how, and maybe for other developers listening to this, like how do you, like, do you ask the community, or do you sit and wait for the feedback, or do you have like, next week we're gonna have a feedback week, so please play it and give us feedback? Or how does that work? How is the community, how do you sort that with the community who plays the game?
I think if we had the answer to that, we could live off of telling developers how to do it, because that's, to us, that's also still one of the hardest part. How do you build a community? How do you reach all the players that love these kind of games? And it's an ongoing thing that we struggle to find out. But I can mention one thing that I think we benefited greatly from, and that's joining a community. Like, find a developer community that can help you develop the game before it's ready to release, before it's ready to show off to the public. And then also make sure to be in a community that can help you reach new players and will tell you and help you reach the player base that you want.
But I'm curious about the people who play it now, the demo that is out. Like, how do you get feedback from just randoms? And that feedback, is that just randomly you find it on Steam, for example?
We joined a Discord community called Indieverse, and in that community there are tons of very talented and experienced developers who did. One of the things we got from there was this spreadsheet of people to contact. Like, you can get in touch with these people because they have told us we are available if you want to play test, if you want to check, if you want to try and reach players. So we used that and got in touch with a bunch of streamers and playtesters to kind of get the initial feedback. Then we got the demo online, and we started getting feedback from Steam players. We also had we were lucky to get a round of testing with a playtesting service, and from that we got I don't know the number now, last I checked there were 250 reviews, like,
wow,
playtest reviews, and it's awesome. I mean, some of it obviously will be things you already know, but I mean, just getting 250 people to play the game and give you their feedback, there's gonna be a lot of gold in there, so you just have to figure out how to separate that from the rest. I think we've been lucky in some parts, but then I think we also managed to hit. We're scratching an itch, like you say. If you got that feeling from starting the game, that's the same feedback we get from pretty much anyone that starts up the game. Like, this catches the feeling. This is giving me insert old game vibes here. So I think we managed to hit a sweet spot with the way the game feels and looks. And because of that, people want to give us feedback because we're scratching the itch where it's reminding them of something they liked, and they want to tell us, "Ooh, you can do this to make it better." So I think we're a bit lucky in that regard.
We're fortunate to be picked up by the publisher Tribal Storm, who also has a couple of other games in development, and we have a communication with the developers of those games, who also like gives us feedback, and we give them feedback on how we feel. So we're very fortunate with our position at the moment. It was not that with our last game; that was more like release and then see what happens. I wouldn't recommend that if you're going to develop a game. It's more like, but the demo it really is what helped us get the feedback. So that would be one thing. Like, if you have a demo of the feeling, like we had, even though we redid it, the whole entire demo for with a new release coming in October, it still gives you, okay, is this good enough, or what's lacking here? What are your feedback? So that we've got tons of feedback from the demo. So,
and that's the thing that surprised me as well. When we put the demo on Steam, there are these like free gaming hubs, the demo hubs and everything on Steam, where people will actually just look for free demos to play, and those players will also give you a lot of feedback if you just have a demo that they can play. So I think it's a combination of all of it.
Mm. The demo, what's the difference between an early access and a demo? Like, when you release that demo, you set it up as a demo in the Steam Workshop, or
I like to call it, it's a vertical slice. It's a vertical slice of the gameplay, and it has a set beginning, has a set end, and we tell you in the demo, this is the end of the demo. You can continue to play, but we haven't tested it past this point. We haven't implemented a lot of functionality past this point. But that's also giving them the same kind of vibes that we want them to have in the full game. You've reached the end game. Feel free to continue playing if you want. We know how involved you can get in a settlement if you play it for 2 hours. So the demo is kind of, it's a vertical slice of the game, and the full game will just be more of that.
I think it's up to tier two, I think it stops. I can't remember. And yeah, and we have like up to 6 tiers planned at the moment with more features as well. And yeah, it's just like it's just a slice.
Wow, that's nice to hear, reassuring for me, because it's exactly what I'm working on now, is to slice off a part of my world and let the player test it, and then I'm trying to implement all the things I want in the full game. So this vertical slice, if you will be like, the full game is just going to be more of that, but obviously more store and more whatever, and you can upgrade stuff more and so on.
We will do the same that we did now. Like we will continue on the full game of as we go progress. But if we get some major updates that we'll rework how things really function in the game, we will just add that part or update the demo. So yeah, like if there's a menu system or there is if there's anything new that we can include in the demo that will give you more of the feeling we want to give, then we will include it in the demo. But still, you won't progress further. The multiplayer is not included in the demo, yes, stuff like that.
So I have another question. How many years have you been working on this game, and how many hours per day do you guys work on this game? And you're a full-time daddy times 4, I think you said. How much longer is it going to take until the game is done? How?
I think everybody everybody has a hobby. So you can have a hobby and do game development on the side, but I don't think that.
Yeah, keep telling your wife that.
I don't think that's possible. Playing and making games is my hobby. So, however many hours I want to spend on my hobby is the amount of hours I have to make the game.
Yeah.
We've been making Falklands for about a year, I think.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Right now. Yeah. Yeah. We started planning around October or November last year, right after we released the last game. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's how far we got.
And what tech stack are you using for the game, by the way?
It's using an engine called Phaser. It's a JavaScript web game engine.
Yeah, it was supposed to be just like the proof of concept, and then we figure out, oh, this works. So let's just continue here. And then it's a good thing we didn't choose Unity.
Have you heard about that, Rune, by the way?
I don't even know what a tech... No. What did you say? A tech stack?
Tech stack.
Tech stack. So the like the all the technology that you use for making something.
Yeah. So it's for the developers. I can give you the list of tech names for the tech stack. It's the engine is Phaser JavaScript engine. It's running in an Electron wrapper with Node and JavaScript / TypeScript in the code, and with all the build tools and things around that. But I'm a web developer, web designer by trade. So I knew that technology and I knew how to work with it. So it has its limitations, obviously, but it's for a proof of concept, it was very quick to get up and running, and then that ended up as the game. So we'll see how well that scales. But for now, it runs smooth like butter.
And I think because of the news, we sort of have to get into it. So Rune, since you're developing your game in Unity, have you heard the news about their like license updates?
No, I just talked to Jamie. He was Kickback Slug guest a couple of weeks ago, and he also mentioned something about Unity. So I realized there is some big news here.
So I'm really glad that we can get your reaction on this live. So basically this, Unity has changed their license model. And basically this, if you reach a threshold of over $200,000 of revenue and 200,000 installs, then after that you will have to pay Unity per time your game is installed. And that includes, like, if I install your game once on my cell phone and once on my computer, or once on my Mac and once on my Windows machine, that's two separate installs, so you will have to pay Unity twice per that. Or maybe, I think also, if you reinstall the game, and there's some people are discussing, like, if someone pirates your game, will you have to pay Unity?
Yeah, they talked about going away from the reinstalls, but still, like, if you have five different units and your game costs $1, then you're going in minus. So that's
yeah. So what's your reaction, Rune? What do you think?
Well, my reaction is the only thing I thought about was, this sounds like I would have to stay in touch with Unity forever. Like, I think 5 years from now, I have to keep paying.
Yeah.
I don't like the sound of that at all. Like, the guy who made my music, when we went to a meeting with that, like, I said, before we start buttering each other up and all that corporate bullshit, before we go anywhere, I am not going to sign this unless I get all rights, all that stuff. I don't want to be in touch with you guys once the game is out or after the music is done. I don't want any sort of paper signage or royalties or anything. That's just a headache. I'm an artist. I don't want that shit. So that was sort of my approach with that. And now it sounds like Unity is doing that thing too, where I would have to in a best case scenario, I make a game and it sells well, and then I can sort of, like, I don't know, take a couple of months off and think, what should I do next? And, like, maybe a year or two will pass before I start making games again. But it sounds like I would have to constantly stay in touch with Unity to pay fees because I have released a game via Unity. So I wonder how hard it's to move on over to a different engine. That's my first thought.
Or just hope your game goes as our first game as well. Just don't sell copies.
Doesn't sell 200,000 units.
Yeah, well, that would be the other thing. Yeah. If it did sell 200,000 copies for, what, $20, $30 each, then that would be enough money to maybe... But it still sounds like a headache. Like, ongoing headache.
I think I heard as well, a lot of these free-to-play games and mobile games, they have a lot of installs, but they don't have... The revenue isn't linked to the number of installs, whereas selling a game is, it's kind of linked to installs, but obviously if you install it on several units from one sale, it's still, there's a disconnect there, and that it's still terrible. It's nothing, there's no defending it, but at least then there's some kind of link. But for someone who has either a free-to-play game or a very low revenue per sale, it's disastrous. It's impossible.
Yeah, it just sounds so... I don't really get the point of it, but... Because at this point, if your game sold more than whatever amount of $100,000 or whatever, they will get a cut. Anything underneath that, it was just whatever. I think that's how it worked up until now. But I don't really see the point in why would they want me to pay per unit?
Like, I don't blame Unity for trying to find a business model that works for them, but... I guess they should probably think it through, and they have. They're going back on many things, and that, of course. But it's I think the trust has been broken with the community, that which is the main issue. But and you see, like Unreal, they're taking a much bigger cut than Unity, as far as I can tell, like 5% or something. And I understand them wanting to earn money, and I tried Unity many times, and it's a great engine. And as far as I know from people talking about it, the developers are fantastic. So it's hopefully they can find a way out of this, because people are depending on the jobs, of course, but still not the best way to go.
I think they should just take a bigger cut of the pie. That would, so it's just a one time thing. To me, that sounds the best way, because then I don't have to think about it.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that the developers reacted most to was the fact that they kind of retroactively applied this license to everyone who has Unity installed and is using Unity right now, because they had this in the license agreement that you signed up to when you started using Unity. They have a clause that said it's a perpetual license; they're not going to change it in the future. But then they removed that clause silently, and then they removed the tracking of the license, because they have a GitHub repository that tracks changes to the license, so everyone can kind of see how the license changes over time. So they disabled that repository so people couldn't track the license changes, and then they removed that clause that said we won't change it in the future, and now it's retroactively applied to everyone who's using Unity. So kind of that trust is... breaking that trust is... Even if they backpedal on all the changes now, what's to say they're not going to do that again a year from now? So I think that's business-wise, it's terrible. Even if the business model that they came up with was good, doing that, pulling out the carpet like that and retroactively applying it when you said you weren't going to, that trust is never coming back.
Yeah, and I don't really get why they don't do like Unreal, like do a revenue share, like take a percentage of what the person or company making the game is making, like take 5% or something, instead of like tying it to something arbitrary like installing the game, which is really bizarre, I think.
Yeah, and especially nowadays when everything is down, like... Well, I mean, I guess that makes sense from a business perspective to make as much money as possible, because now you download all these games, right, all the time. And when your Steam Deck or whatever is full, you delete a bunch of games, and then you want to play them again, you download them again, and then...
Yeah.
Like,
when I sell a game to someone, it doesn't matter to me how many times they install it and how many devices they install it to. I've sold them... I mean, obviously, there's a license thing, but I've sold them the game. Play it on as many devices as you want. I don't think locking that down to a number of installs or something that we had in the 90s is a good idea. So this kind of, it reintroduces that as a thing, because now developers have to think about, ooh, how many units per sale can I afford to let them install it? That doesn't make any sense. It's I thought we were done with that.
Yeah. I think... At some point when I get to release my game, I'm gonna make this like Steve Jobs parody skit or something, where he invents like the idea of software as a product. Like, you pay once and then you own it. Imagine that.
Yeah. Imagine that.
It's something like we've talked about like every episode of this podcast, it feels like sometimes, but everything is like people want to make everything as a service. There's even like a cafe chain in Stockholm where they have coffee as a service. So like everything is just nothing is a product anymore. It's all subscriptions nowadays.
Yeah. And there's a limit to how many subscriptions you can pay. It's the same with streaming services as well. It was okay when it was Netflix, and then you got HBO, and then it just expands because everybody thinks that they can also make a streaming service and tap into that revenue. But that revenue is still split across all the providers now, and then it doesn't scale well.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Exactly.
Maybe we should make Falklands as a service.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
that's a good idea. I'll run that past the brothers.
You can pay per citizen.
Pay per
citizen. PPC.
Do you want to unlock the saw making tool chain right now? Pay 99. No, that's that's not the kind of game you want to make.
Or make it just NFT. Mess it all
or
up.
You can make it like Amazon Web Services. You buy portion of 10,000 steps, so after the citizens have walked those steps, you have to fill them more for them to walk more steps or something.
This is like a buzzword bingo of all the terrible trends in gaming and modern computing all in one.
But I think when it comes to for example Xbox Game Pass, it's a bit shady whether or not they are going plus or not with that. And then if you look at all these PlayStation games that sells as much as they do, it's like, or Nintendo is a great example. They never put their games on sale and they always sell well and so on. There is like a, I don't know, it feels like people want to pay for the stuff they want to play.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yet there's more. And I think Disney Plus is another streaming service that is going like $1 billion minus every month or something like that. It's just like it seems like it's not working. I think people want to pay for the stuff they want. Like my wife and I just talked about like the new Super Mario movie that came out months ago, but I was like, I want to buy the Blu-ray. I want to own it. I don't want to just fucking watch it on some streaming service. I just think that, and I know I sound like an old man who says, "Ah, people want to own physical stuff." I don't really necessarily talk about physical stuff, but
No, but that I remember I bought the, I'm not going to say what company, but I bought the Monkey Island game on a device, which is a tablet device, with an Apple behind it. that game worked for a long time, and then I wanted to reinstall it, but it wasn't there anymore, and I couldn't download it because it wasn't licensed anymore because it didn't work on that version. Mm. So then it wasn't mine. Mm. And that's like that. And then the same with streaming services. I love streaming services because I jump from one series to another. But I think it's said to, I think it was HBO, I think, who had this Westworld. I love the series Westworld. You can't watch it anymore, apparently. Mm. It's just gone. You have to buy it now. So then you're paying a service to watch it again, and then when you want to watch it, now you have to buy it.
Mm, right.
So it's like, what's the point? Yeah. But of course, it's good and bad and everything.
Yeah. Odo, you were about to say something when I dropped Disney.
Yeah. Sorry, did one of you have to go about now?
Yeah, my time has
gone. So I think we could start wrapping it up as we're approaching 1 hour. But I think before that, do you want to plug the game and where can people follow you? And give us all you got, basically.
We have a Steam page, Falklands, not the Falklands Islands, just in case anyone is wondering about how the game is spelled. It's Folks, like in people, Falklands. We're at Falklands Game on Twitter, and we have all our links there, and we post there every day, pretty much, game updates. And if you like this kind of settlement builder games, if you like Banished, Settlers, Anno, this whole genre, we'd love for you to follow us, chat with us, play our game. Just tell us what you like. We can't promise we'll make everything, but at least someone will talk about it.
Great. All right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to be on our podcast and talk about the game. I think it's really fascinating. So I hope everyone listening to this is at least trying out the demo. And remember, it's not Unity, so it's free for them for you to play it. So go right ahead and install yes. it as much as you want.
As many devices as you want.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a pleasure. So thank you again so much. Thank you, Rune, for being my co-host as always. Thank you for listening. And we will see you next Wednesday. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you.